Rabbi Yitzchak by Yosef, so when Rabbi Yitzchak says the same of the son of Rabbi Yosef, he said, Omar Rabbi Yochanan, the same of Rabbi Yochanan. What did he say? He said, after Divrei Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda, even in accordance with his opinion, Ein Ladov Esof. We've already said that anyway, that Chachamim say the same thing too. That, you know, if you go simply on the basis of Al Pi Atzmai, then he can make all kinds of wild claims which have nothing to back them up. But he says, after Divrei Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda, v'lo mibayil mishnah seidum. So what he says, well, if you accept, you know, this opinion of Rabbi Yehuda, then I don't have to tell you that according to our Mishnah also, that we could find, you know, flaws in the argument. So he says, no, adrabah, on the contrary, he says, the Mishnah seinu ikar ikar, right? Hasam leka ikar, right? He says, our Mishnah gives us the essential teaching, namely how many witnesses you have to have, and so on and so on, even though there's a disagreement, but still, it cannot be simply al piyatsma, right? But Hasam, in the other case, namely, you know, the quotation that you quoted me from Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda, it says, Leka Iker, he can't say that that is the prevailing opinion. Ela Yidmar Hochi Yidmar. If you're going to learn as follows. Omer Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Yosef, Omer Rabbi Yochanan, the Divrei Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda, Af Mishnah Seinu Ein Ladov Esof. He holds, so happens that, you know, Rabbi Yosef Bar Yehuda holds, that I could find flaws also with the Mishnah. So, we're sort of left up in the air. But now we come to the whole idea. What is this whole business? Is it really worthwhile with the, you know, going through the process? So, Zomar Rabbi Chanina Mesura. Rabbi Chanina Mesura said, Lo leimo inish le'itzei bezman hazeh, lo sistari bahadei plodi. Says, a man should not say to his wife, in our time, do not go into seclusion with so and so. Why? Dilma ka'im alon ka Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda, Dama kinu al pi atzma. Because maybe the halacha would follow Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda, who says all that he has to do is, you know, to al pi atzma. He himself is the one who makes the statements. Umitzara. And the result will be that she will be prohibited to him, obviously. It means that, you know, by simply making a statement, Mazman Azer, where we don't have the possibility even of having Mayim Hamo'orin in order to justify her, to show that she was right and he was wrong, so the result would be that immediately she becomes prohibited to him, and of course he would have to give her a get because they can't live together anymore. So don't do it. As I said, today, right now, he says, we don't have Nesota Lemirtuke, right? The waters of the Sota in order to prove whether she is. And as a result, he will prohibit her unto himself forever. So now, yes.
On which one of the individuals does the burden of proof rest in order for her to claim a ksufa? He has to give her a get after he makes claims against her.
Right. The truth of the matter is that the best of them is supported because we can't have any more. You know, the mind of Orim and so on and so forth. But nevertheless, the very fact, you know, that he can't live with her anymore.
He has to give her a get.
Yeah, he would have to give her a get. Yeah, you have to pay her. So, because as long as he doesn't have witnesses and so on, you know, so he can't do it.
But she remains a marked woman, though.
Huh?
She remains a marked woman.
She remains a marked woman under the circumstances, I suppose. I mean, but only because, you know,
He accuses her,
exactly. You know, this is the problem. Yeah. So therefore, a person should not go around making these statements.
But is there really a difference between
Al-Piyasmo
or with two
Abin,
let's say?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, we don't have it anyway. Basmana said, the whole thing, you know, it's more in the realm of theory right now. Right.
You shouldn't even do it with Abin.
Right, right. Even with Adam, you shouldn't do it. But with Adam, you know, it would be more reason, you know, to go and to have a divorce or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But this way.
If he's really intending for a divorce, then it doesn't really matter, then I'll be asked for
one. Yeah, right.
Yeah, but again, there's a question of the ksuba, you see. Because technically, if she really was guilty of being a sota, then in that case, He not only gives her a get, but also he's freed from paying the ksuba. Whereas if he simply divorces her because of the fact that that they can't live together, then in that particular case he must pay her the ksuba.
If he doesn't have any witnesses, he can't prove her unfaithful.
So. Right, but the result of his making a statement to her immediately means that she is now Sarah's Salome Lobbies, you see, that she is prohibited to him from that point on, and that's all. They can't live together anymore.
So with
the
wife. Anyway, that's
well, that's already a different problem.
Yeah. Okay.
So now they come to the question over here. Omer Reish Lakish. Reish Lakish says, Baal Lashon Kinui. Why do they use the expression Kinui? Right? Of course, I mean, it says the Torah, kinei sezishto. So the question is, then what is the meaning of the word, kinui, right? So we translated before in the technical sense that he has to give her a warning, right? But in reality, is this the etymological meaning of it? Of course not. What is the etymology of the word? It means to be jealous. So, in that particular case, he says, balashon kinui. What do we mean by the language, by the term kinui? It says, Dover Hamatil Kino Benul Benachairim. It says, this business where he accuses her, this is something that already creates jealousy between her and between other people. Why? It says, Almoy says, we would see Kosovar Kinui Api Atzbo. Right. First of all, he says, well, if that's the case, we see that. Reish Lakish then would be in agreement with the idea of Rabbi Yossi to the effect that all he has to do is to say that he doesn't like her, right? The chulei alma leyadei dekonilei, but everybody else, since he's only done it al pi atzmo, not in the presence of witnesses, you understand, he's done it privately to her at home. So in that case, nobody knows what exactly is going to happen, and that he is jealous of her and that he wants her. The Amre, and they'll say, "My the Kama, the Kabodlo, the Yosemivat Kinabahata." He says, "What's the big idea? She goes around, she doesn't have anything more to do with him, and the result is that she herself will bring upon herself, an unpleasant feeling on the part of others. They'll feel, that she is something must be wrong with her, she doesn't have anything to do, and so on and so forth.
She's under suspicion.
Right, so this is the element over there of suspicion or jealousy. There's another interpretation now that we have. Rav Yema Bar Shalemya Mishmeda Abaye, in the name of Abaye, he said as follows. He says, Omar, he says, Dover Habatil Kino Beinu Leveino. We're talking actually about something arouses jealousy between the husband and the wife, never mind dragging in other people. Sweet thing. So, Alma, so we see that Kosova Kinui Al Pishnayim Edim, right? We see that he's of the opinion that Kinui requires witnesses. The Chulei Alma Yadei the Konelah. And if there are witnesses, then everybody is aware of the fact that he has given her warning, right? The Ihu, who does the Mevat Kina Bahada? And he is the one then who caused that jealousy, or in other words, that the suspicious feeling should be created towards her. So, Alma, so as a result, Kasavre de Osilikanis. We come to the conclusion, we see to it that, as a matter of fact, it is prohibited for a man not only to be jealous, but also to give his wife such warnings. He can't do it. Okay? Uman Omar Mutalakanes. On the other hand, there is somebody who still says it is permitted to be jealous and to give warning and so on. Mahu lashon kinui. So what is the meaning of the word kinui? Says Amar Rav Nachman by Yitzchak. He says that ein kinui elashon hasra. He says kinui simply means hasra. Of course, this is the way we've been interpreting, namely that kinui means warning. But as I said, etymologically, it doesn't mean that. However, they find a pasuk in which it can be interpreted. V'chein hu omer. Likewise, it says, and this is the interpretation of the pasuk in order to prove that, says Vayikane Yad Hashem Li'artzah. Says that God literally was jealous for his land, but he takes it in the sense that God warned his people, you know, concerning the land. Well, if you go again to the origin, take a look at the Rashi over there in the third line, okay?
Yeah.
Begins with the second line, the end over there. It says, Akane Shem Li'artzah, says, Hisra, he warned them, the Yelek, the Chosil, the Gozom, and all different types of locusts, right? Shelo Yashchisu Ones Artzo, that they would not destroy the land anymore. The Vishiluach Goyvai, Mishtoy Parsha Le'el, because the Parsha above is talking about, you know, the plague of locusts. The Artzo means Al Artzo, to his land. Kemova Yishalu, or concerning his land, Yishalu Anshe Yamokum Le'ishta. Well, does it mean the Ishto? Doesn't mean that, you know, they asked her to his wife. It means they asked her al Ishto. Atem Tirivun Labal. Will you carry on the, you know, the argument for Baal and so on? And why you drag this in? They submissed. But.
The same thing.
No, I mean, that because maybe. It says La Baal, and it means al Baal. In other words, you know, for the sake of or concerning the Baal, okay? These are all quotations over here, all right, to show that like Kanan Hashem Liyatzo means that God gave warning concerning the land. That in other words, that they would do tshuva and everything else, and then that God would remove the plague of the locusts from them. Tanya, we have learned, Hoya Rabbi Meir Omer, Rabbi Meir said, Odom Oiver Aver B'Seser, right, a person sins in secret, V'Akodesh Baruch Hu Ma'achis Olam Egolui. And the Rebbeinu Shel Olam makes a public declaration concerning it. Shenemar, as it's written, the Ovar Olav Ruach Kino, right? That the spirit of Kino has passed over him, and the Ein Avero, and this word Avero over here, Ovar, right, refers Ela Lashon Hakrosa, means a public announcement. Shenemar, as we find the pasuk where it's written by Itzav Moshe, that Moshe gave commandments, this is in the connection with the building of the Mishkan. So, Vayaviru Kol Bamachne, that they caused a report, literally, to pass through the camp, in other words, to, you know, to warn the people. Reish Lakish Omar, Reish Lakish said, in Onam Eivar Adero, man does not sin, Ela Imkei Nichbas Bo Rachtus, except when the spirit of foolishness enters into him. Shenemar, as the pasuk says, ish ish kisista ishto, right? A man, if his wife should turn aside, literally, so take a look the way it's written, he says, tishta ksiv. There's no difference in the spelling between tista and tishta. Tista, of course, is from the word sata, which means to go astray, to go aside, right? But tishta is from the word shaita, fool, shtus, and so on and so forth. So that, in other words, what brings about sin? Foolishness, right? Kesiv. The Kesiv goes with the previous one. All right. Tana Devei Rabbi Yishmael, Ipne Ma'ahe Amino Torah Eid Echot B'Seita. Now, Rabbi Yishmael says, why did the Torah believe Eid Echod, one witness, when it comes to Sota? Of course, let's remember, this would be in accordance with the opinion of Rabbi Eliezer, or even the opinion of Rabbi Yosef, Barei Yehuda, right? So, but why only one witness is necessary? If we follow that opinion, he says, Sheraglayim Ladover, because there is a foundation for what he's done. What is the foundation? Sharei Kinolo, Benistara, because after all, he gave a warning, and yet, in spite of her warning, right, Benistara, she went into seclusion afterwards. Anyway, the Eid Echod, and one witness, Me'ida Shehitameya, can testify the fact, you know, that she has committed, that she has defiled herself. Okay. So Omar le Rav Papa, Rav Papa said la Abaye, he said to him, he says, V'hoh, ki k'siva kinui, v'sa stira tuma hik, k'siva. Look, he says, the word, you know, where we bring kinei zishto, this comes in the Torah, actually, after where it says first, v'nistara, v'hinit ma'ah, right? And then, what do we find? Then we find the kinei, right? So, Omar le, yeah, the Omar, v'chvor avar, meaning, yeah, okay, it has already happened. What has already happened? The very fact, why did Kino in the first place take place? Because of the fact that he noticed, I mean, that she was doing something, and he gave a warning, and so on and so forth, that, you know, she shouldn't do it. So this is why it ultimately led to making a formal announcement. The first action of Kino would be, let's say, in spirit. He became jealous, he became angry at her, okay? But then, Kine, in the sense, you know, of a formal action taking place, this is already after he's noticed, you know, that he gave warning, and she disregarded the warning, and so on and so forth. Okay. Well, I think, yeah, so it says, Elamiyato, that's the case, we'll go a couple more minutes. It says, V'ovar lechem kol cholutz, if it says, and, you know, every chalutz is the Passover. In other words, you know, the members of the Bnei Gad, Bnei Reuven, if you remember, you know, to go armed and carry on the fight for the conquest of the Eretz Canaan, even though their families remained on the other side of the Jordan, right? So, Hachinami, awesome. B'dich Sivanich B'shohor, it's the Tnei Adeshem, the Achat Hoshuvu. Inasmuch as we follow over there and it says V'yovar lechem kol cholutz, and then it's followed by the fact V'nech b'shoh ha'oretz, that the land hasn't yet been conquered, right? So that therefore, and then the first says V'achat ha'shuv, then you will return. So mashma d'lahaba. So if we see from that the word V'yovar really refers to some future event, namely V'yovar lechem kol cholutz, right? This is when he would notice, you know, that he would be unhappy that the first take place. So Hela Hocho, Isalkadad Yudhsive, if here we follow the way we find the Pesukim, the way they're arranged in the Pesuk, then the Ovar Bosatumostira. So since the word the Ovar Lov Ruach Kino comes after she has already nistarov hinit ma'ah, so lomali. So what do I need it for? So Tana Devei Rabbi Yishmael, the school of Rabbi Yishmael taught, Einodim Mekane Leishto, Elohim Ke Nichneso Bo Ruach. A person does not become jealous of his wife unless a spirit enters into him. Shenemar, the Ovar Alav Ruach Kino, right, the Kine Yishto. So my ruach, so what kind of a ruach are we talking about? What kind of a spirit? So Rabbon and Amre ruach tuma, that the man is infected with the ruach tuma, in other words, an impure spirit. Rav Ashi Omar ruach tahara, but Rav Ashi says it is a ruach tahara, in other words, the spirit of purity. What would be Tuma, the fact, you know, that he's suspicious of her and he suspects, you know, that she's done the worst thing. Whereas Ratara would imply that what he wants to do is to clear the act and, to make sure, you know, that, you know, both he and his wife are living, in the right spirit. Umistabra, he says, and it makes sense, Commander Ratara, the Tanya, because it's written, the Kine Yisishto. Rishus, in other words, the fact that he becomes jealous of a wife, this is not something that he must do. It's not an obligatory action. It is only voluntary on his action. Different Rabbi Yishmael, but Rabbi Akiva Emer Chova. Rabbi Akiva says it is an obligation for the man. In other words, the difference of opinion, if we say it's reshus, means that, the man, if he's doing it, more out of a ruach tuma, that, you know, he's getting the evil impulse in order to do it. Whereas Rabbi Akiva's opinion, where he says that it is chova, it means actually that he wants to make sure, you know, that their marriage is on a firm footing, and he doesn't want that there should be any action which would cause jealousy. And therefore, he said, this is the reason why he says it's an obligation for the man to warn his wife if he sees that, you know, she's behaving in a way which is not right, to tell her so. Okay, and straighten out the business between them. Well, I think that we'll stop at this particular point. This is Shebal Tzedah Zeger, but I thank you all for the patience of staying up. The Ruach, Tumor, Ruach Tara, and so on, with Rashi this time, okay?
December 4th, 1996.
I'm
2 years behind.
Okay. Ruach Tumor, Ruach Tara, excuse me. Okay, do you see where it says over there? Philip Redler. Okay. On the side, you see where it says La'el Beis Nido Gimel? You see that?
Yeah.
Okay, go down one line.
Yeah.
Okay, and you see Nichnasor Boruach, okay?
Yeah.
All right. In the Rashi.
In the Rashi.
Okay.
Okay. It says Nichnasor Boruach. All right. In other words, he says, well, first of all, for those of you who were not here last week, I just want to point out that they point out that this business of Sota, you could take the word Sister, which is spelled Tav Shin Tes Hey, if you'll take a look, you'll see over here in the Chumash, and you could read it, you know, also as Tish Teh, in the sense of to be a Shoita. In other words, they say the reason why a person becomes jealous of his wife is because a ruach shtus enters him. In other words, a spirit of folly enters into him. Okay. But now that we say, you know, that there is a spirit that enters, so then this is now the difference of opinion as to whether the spirit that comes into him is, as we'll see from Rashi, is it a spirit, you know, that the, as a result of Tumor of Tavra, and we'll see how Rashi understands it. Okay, so that's why I want to be review from Rashi, this particular point. It says, Nichnasor Boruach, right? A spirit enters into him, and he says, where does it come from? He says, Mimoro. In other words, the Ribbono Shel Olam is actually sending a spirit of jealousy into him. But for what purpose? So it says, well, the common mefarish, so later on we're going to explain that ruach taharo, ruach tumo, right? Is it a ruach tumo, right? Ruach taharo, is it, in other words, a spirit which represents taharo, in other words, what shall we say, the you know, righteousness, right? Or is it ruach tumo? And now he explains, what do you mean tumo? He says, al yidei sotot. In other words, the tumor, the impure spirit, is actually, this is Satan himself who's inciting him. Why? Habola hachtio, because he wants to cause him to sin. Lahakdin tesishno, by becoming jealous and provoking his wife. So in other words, the man himself has already an obligation, that is, you know, he has a share in the fact that why does his wife, you know, want to become faithless to him. Partly it's because he himself, you see, is doing something in order to anger his wife, to provoke her, you see. Okay? So this is, but at any rate, that being the case, this is certainly not conducive to Shalom Bayis, and so that therefore we have to assume that it is the Yetzer Hara, the Satan himself, you know, who's doing it. Okay. Rabbonon. So with the Rabbanan, he says the Rav Ashi and say Amrei Ruach Tumah. They say that it is a Ruach Tumah, right? As we've just explained. But the other opinion is that it is not Ruach Tumah, but it's a Ruach Tara. So what is Ruach Tara? So the Ruach Tara means Shesoneis Hapritzus. In other words, it is the Rabbeinu Shel Olam who's sending a spirit into him because he wants to do away with loose conduct. This is the reason why, that, you know, he makes the man suspicious in order to make sure that there will not be any misconduct. Okay?
What does Tahara mean exactly?
Tahara means literally purity.
Literally purity.
Yeah, yeah. You know, Tahar.
Tahar,
right.
Yeah.
Right. So Tahara is the purity.
Justified.
Yeah, but as we say, I mean.
You can't say justified, but something you is
see,
based on solid, relatively solid evidence.
Yeah, obviously, because as we said before, I mean, why is he going?
No,
you know,
no,
this was
no,
the whole discussion we had last week. Is it because he's a bonza? I mean, he's a bandit, the husband, and, you know, he simply is going to keep on testifying to things which didn't happen. And that's, of course, the reason why we have to have Adam, right? Or, you know, is it because he's really concerned about the sanctity of his marriage and so on and so forth, you see? So that you have these two aspects, you see, in this relationship. That are involved. Okay. So getting back to the text, all right, so we see over there.
Going back to the text.
Well.
Yeah.
All right, now we can continue with the Rashi. All right. It says, Mistabra, yeah. All right, so he says, Mistabra, and it makes sense that Commander Omar, that according to the opinion of the one who says the Ruach, you know, where it says that a ruach entered in him, you know, so it's the Koma Rabbi Yishmael. This is Rabbi Yishmael's opinion, who says it's Tahrahi. This is the reason why. The Tanya, the Koomar, because we've learned that there is a difference of opinion, that Rabbi Yishmael said Rishus. In other words, the idea of a man, you know, suspecting his wife and, you know, going through this whole procedure of Sota is only voluntary. In other words, he doesn't have to. He's not obligated to do this. And he says that this is a plukta of the Rabbi Yishmael, Rabbi Akiva. That this is the machlokes between Rabbi Yishmael and Rabbi Akiva, and the comment a little bit later on, before Ishtamayel, we'll learn the reasons why each one has this point of view. Because, as we said, according to Rabbi Yishmael, he says it's only reshus that he should, you know, go through the Sota procedure, whereas according to Rabbi Akiva, he says it is a mitzvah for the husband. If he is at all suspicious that she's, you know, she's guilty of misconduct, right, misbehaving, and, you know, a witness has seen her, that, you know, after going through the procedure where he warned her in the presence of witnesses not to, and still she went and she secluded himself, so in that particular case it's a mitzvah to go through with it. Of course, we also learned that Bizman Hazer, this is part of what we learned last week, we don't have any more the Mayim HaMa'orim, don't have it, so that therefore the whole procedure of the Sota doesn't exist anymore. But we also learned that still you have to be careful about what you have to say to your wife, because maybe, according to one opinion that we learned last week, al piatzmai, that the man can prohibit her from ever living together with him anymore.
Yeah, that's right.
By challenging her and saying, you know, that she was guilty of misconduct. And I don't have to tell you what that does to a stable marriage.
It breaks it up immediately.
Breaks it up, of course, immediately. Right. All right. So, getting back to the text of the Gemara, okay? Yes. So, we already learned, you know, Ton Devei Rabbi Yishmael, they know the Mekani Lishtal and Kenet Saburach, right?
Yeah.
That, you know, a spirit of jealousy passes through him, Mekani Yishtal.
Right.
He says, my Ruach, what do we mean, you know, the Ruach, simply because, if you remember, the statement simply said, Ton Sova Ruach, so Rabbanan Amrei Ruach Tumo. Right? Rav Ashi Yom Ruach Tara. So, and then we said the Mistabra, and it makes sense, Commander Omar Ruach Tara, because why do we have the whole procedure of the Sota? It is in order to try to, you know, protect the purity of marriage and to prevent pritzes. Pritzes, remember, means misconduct, okay? Breaking down marriage. The Tanya, as we have learned, Bekinei Yisishtoi, that when the Pasuk in the Torah says, and he will literally be jealous of his wife, or he suspects his wife, or as we interpreted last week, that he warns his wife of his suspicions, right? So in that particular case, Rishus, Divrei Rabbi Yishmael, Kon Rabbi Yishmael, this is only a voluntary action of Rabbi Akiva, Emir Chova, right? So, now, he Amrit Bishlamo, if you say that Takir is a Ruach Tara, right? That it is the spirit, you know, of purity that's impelling the husband to do it, because he's concerned that there should not be any misconduct in marriage, then shapir, then it makes sense. What makes sense? It makes sense in accordance with the opinion of Rabbi Akiva, who said that it is a mitzvah. You understand?
Right.
Elo yamit ruach tuma rishus. Right? Bechova. If you say that it is a ruach tuma, and it's only a matter that, you know, the husband is simply impelled with jealousy, and then he can decide whether to do one thing or the other, right? So the question is, and in that particular case, are we to say then that a person should allow a ruach tumo to enter his soul? Is it right for a person to be so suspicious of his wife? In other words, that you know, that this is the work of Satan, so to speak, in order to, you know, to arouse anger and enmity between the two of them. So obviously the feeling is that it's not right. So gufa. So we come back again to the basic argument. Gufa always means, you know, that after having some slight digression, we come back to the major idea. Okay? Gufa. Torah says bikine yisishtei, right? And we said it is rishus, it's voluntary, Devi Rabbi Yishmael, Rabbi Akiva, Omer Chova, right? Now they bring another example of another thing. It says, Lo Yitamor. Anybody remember where this pasuk occurs? In other words, he shall become tamei to her. The answer is, it's in Emor. Well, at the beginning of Emor, where it says, you know, Emor lakohanim b'nei Aaron, right? Nefesh lo yitamor b'yomim, that they are not permitted, you know, except kim l'sherah, korgay lov, and so on and so forth. And then it says, la'hoisei hapsula, ha'korgay lov, you know, ha'shem lo ha'yisol le'yish, lo yitamor. We actually, today, we extend it even if the, you know, she gets married and so on. But in those days,
right. She's divorced, the widow has no children.
Yeah. Let's say we extend it already to his sister, no matter whether she's married or unmarried.
Right.
More. Right. Yeah.
Is it Vayikra, right?
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Because
yeah.
It says so.
All right. So there it says, you know, lo yitamo means that the kohen, right, becomes tummy. He defiles himself. In other words, he violates the fact that he has to be in a state of purity normally, right?
Right.
For her. So again, there's a difference of opinion over here. Is it rishus? This is Divrei Rabbi Shmuel. Rabbi Shmuel, in other words, would say that this is only voluntary on the part of the kohen. That if he wishes to defile himself, he'll defile himself. But if he wishes not to defile himself, then he won't do it. That's the opinion of Rabbi Yishmael, right? Rabbi Akiva Imer Chova. Rabbi Akiva says that it is obligatory for the kohen to be metame for all the close relatives, you know, that are mentioned in the pasuk, including Achosa Hapsula. Okay? Then we have another pasuk, the Yoilom Bohem Ta'avodim. I don't know if you remember where that is. This happens to be in Parsha Behar. Also, towards the end of the Sefer Vayikra. Then they're dealing with the problem about Avodim, okay? And the Torah first speaks about the Eved Ivri. Of course, Eved Ivri is already mentioned also in Parsha Mishpatim, but in Bahar they go into it in somewhat greater detail, according, of course, to our Chazal, sort of learned in Kedushin. They make a distinction between the Eved Ivri who was sold by the Beis Din because he committed robbery and he was not able to repay, right, so he has to work out.
He has to work the debt off.
Right, has to work the debt off. So that, they say, this is what is covered by Mishpatim. But the one that's mentioned in Bahar is of a man, you know, becomes impoverished, so he sells himself as a slave, exactly, in order to be able to, you know, take care of his family and so on.
Some
okay?
Some of the people don't know that stuff.
Right.
I heard somebody reply to me about a year ago, there's only one evidence, the one person sells to pay off his family.
No, obviously he never learned the Gemara Kedushin.
I didn't get that far.
Okay. Now, all right.
Yeah,
now, then, after discussing about the Eved Ivri, then they speak about the Kenanim, Eved Kenani, okay?
Right.
All right. So, there, it says, you know, Le'olam Bahem Tavod, that if you have a Canaanite slave, then Le'olam Bahem Tavod. In other words, they are, literally, you are to work them as slaves forever. In other words, of course, I mean, even, okay. So there's a difference of opinion again. Rishus divrei Rabbi Shmuel. Rabbi Shmuel says this is only voluntary. In other words, what? If the master wishes, he can right. He can give him his freedom, or he can enable people to buy out the services of the slave. Okay. So this is according to Rabbi Shmuel. But Rabbi Akiva, hey, Berachayva, he says it's obligatory. He says to keep the Eved Kenani, because the Torah says to Yoylom Bahem Tavayda. In other words, the Balavos cannot sell him. Okay,
you cannot sell him free either.
Right. Of course, the Eved Kenani, as you know, there is, however, a way out for him if his master injures him in any way.
Let's say he knocks out an eye, right?
Then in that case, already the Torah says, you know, that he has
let
to set
go.
Him free.
It's
right.
Not usable anyway.
Tachas and so on and so forth. You say, okay? But we're talking about, you know, as far as the business, let's say, of buying freedom, or simply what we would call manumission. In other words, you know, that he gives him, he emancipates him, so to speak. Okay. And there is a procedure. I mean, you have to go before the Beis Din, you understand? And in the presence of the Beis Din, you have to declare, you know, that you want to. Famous story, you know, in the Mishnah about Rabbi Gamliel had a wonderful Eved by the name of Tabi. Tabi was very prone and so on. By the way, I mean, you know, even the Eved Kenani has to be circumcised, and he has to also observe all the mitzvahs, except for those that, you know, Shazman Groma.
Except what?
Shazman Groma means except for those mitzvahs which are dependent upon time. Right. So, the Eved Kenani also has his obligations, because he is, to a certain extent, you know, like a Jew. And as I said before, you know, he would have to be circumcised, naturally, both male and female would have to immerse themselves in the mikveh. It's part of the fact that they become Jewish now, serving in the Jewish household. So, getting back to Tavi was very from, very attendant to Rabbi Gamliel. Mm-hmm. So, Mishnah tells us that once, you know, they came and they needed a minion, and Tabi was there naturally with his master. So what did they do? So Rabbi Gamliel freed him on the spot so that he could be counted to the minion. Okay, but you know, the Gemara, they question, how could Rabbi Gamliel do such a thing? Doesn't he hold, you know, that Le'olam Bahem Tavod is a chova? You know, how could he violate that? Well, alright, the answer is that the Shein Mitzvah, since he was involved, you're allowed to do, let's say, to neglect one mitzvah if you're performing another mitzvah. Of course, there's certainly.
I mean, by the fact that he freed him, he became Jewish.
He was Jewish, but he could not have been counted to the minion before. Okay?
Because he was a slave.
Because he was a slave.
So
right.
You can't count a slave as a minion.
Can't count a slave to a minion, correct. Ah. Okay? It's a technicality. Of course, we don't have slaves today, so it's in the realm of theory, but still, it's interesting. I mean, to.
No, that's a matter of opinion.
Okay. I know men and women feel, you know, that at times their life is also it's a life of avodas.
Avodas, yeah.
Right. Okay. So, all right. So at this particular point, we have mentioned three different situations where Rabbi Shmuel says Rishut, right? Rabbi Akiva says Chova. Okay. So, Omalei Rabbapa la Abaye. Papa said to Abaye, he said, the Amilor Rab Bisharshia la Rabbi. Others say that actually it was Rav Bisharshi who said to Rav. Remember, I mean, after all, this is oral tradition. The question is, you know, who did it? We want to make sure, because we heard this one said it, and we heard the other one said it. So therefore, we include both of them.
Give them both credit,
absolutely. He says, Leymor, shall we say, he says, that Rabbi Yishmael and Rabbi Akiva b'chol ha-Torah kulo, hochi plige? Are we to say that Rabbi Yishmael and Rabbi Akiva throughout the entire Torah carry on this machlokes, namely that wherever it says, you know, this is what you do, so along comes Rabbi Yishmael and says it's voluntary, whereas along comes Rabbi Akiva and he says it is chayva. Let's take a look at the Rashi, okay? Yeah. Okay. Let's see where we left off over there in the Rashi. The Tanya to come Rabbi Shimon Rishus. Right. Okay. Says it's the coming for you. All right. So Shapir, he says. Okay. Rishus. Oh yeah. Rabbi Akiva Omer Chayva. Right. She also the Shachir Abdel. In other words, he says that it is, obligatory not to free his slave. Right. So then they say Bechol Torah. We say that the entire Torah. The whole asay sheba Torah, that wherever the Torah has an affirmative command, right? Are we to say then that in every single case, what is Rabbi Yishmael's opinion? Well, if you feel like it, okay. If you don't feel like it, no. So in a sense, in case, says Rashi, if that's the case, ein lecho mitzvas asay le Rabbi Yishmael. And in that case, no affirmative commandment in the opinion of Rabbi Yishmael would be obligatory. Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, we can't maintain that position, even logically, right? And yet, from the three examples that we have, it would seem to be that this is a klal, that this is a general rule, right? That according to Rabbi Yishmael, it's only rishus, it's only voluntary on your part to observe it, whereas according to Rabbi Akiva, the affirmative command means that you got to observe it, right?
And these three examples, are they considered a specific definition, or is it all in a different category?
Okay, this is what we're going to examine a little bit further, but we'll see that yeah, each one has his interpretation, but why does he have this interpretation?
None of these says Tasei without Tasei. None of these says Tasei without Tasei.
Okay, that we understand. I mean, you're right about that. It doesn't say that it is prohibited, you know, for example, to. But it does say,
you
know, that
it's
not voter, right?
You may, not.
Correct, right.
No, Yitamud doesn't say he has to or he cannot. He may.
The interpretation, as we say, the way it stands up to this point, right, is that lo yitamur means that the Kohen, if he feels like it, he is metame to his sister. If it's, but according to Rabbi Akiva, it's a mitzvah. He has to observe. Okay. Right. He must be metabe to her. In other words, he has to.
I buy that.
Right.
But then, how does it does a gemara come to say that in that case, according to Rabbi Shmuel, there's no such thing as a definite mitzvah to say. That's
what Rashi is asking. He's asking. I mean, if that's the case, it would seem that no mitzvah hasay according to Rabbi Yishmael. Everything is only voluntary, it would seem, and not obligatory, right? Now, obviously, we can't say that Rabbi Yishmael Taka holds that opinion throughout the Torah. There must be mitzvah hasay that he believes that they are obligatory, just as Rabbi Akiva does. All right. So, therefore, in that case, we now have to look for a different reason. And this is what the Gemara now wants to explore. Okay? Getting back to the Gemara text. Okay? It says, All right. So, Omalei.
Yeah.
So he said to him, he says, Hocha Bikare Pelige. It says, actually, here, the difference of opinion between them is the interpretation of these specific verses. But it doesn't mean what? It doesn't mean that wherever in the Torah there is an affirmative command, that, you know,
it's,
you...
It's voluntary.
Right, that it's purely voluntary. So the first one is what? The Kinei is Ishtar, right? Becomes jealous of his wife, etc., etc. Okay. So, Rishus, Divrei Rabbi Yishmael, right? Rabbi Yishmael says that it's only voluntary. Nobody says that if the husband doesn't feel like going through with the business of Soto, that he's forced to go through with it. Whereas Rabbi Akiva Omer, Tova, Rabbi Akiva says that it is a mitzvah, and he has to go through with it. So,
to go with their waters.
Huh?
To go through with the
bare
waters.
You're right, to go through the whole procedure over there, exactly. Yeah, obviously.
Once he accuses her,
he accuses her, and she has no way to prove her innocence. That's the problem.
The accusation is not
Then in that particular case, you know, so he nes seres olove lobis, so usarto alatzmo is belobis. You understand?
And he can enforce or not enforce the mind.
Right.
It's up to him.
And again,
he has to initiate this business, but she has the right to say, look, I don't want to go through with this, so I'll tell you that, you know, I committed this and this and that's all, and she forfeits her kesuvah as a result, okay, because she doesn't want to go through with it. Huh? Then she can. By all means, then certainly she can do it.
But
you asked me whether she could terminate the procedure.
Can she drink the water on her own?
No, what she's asking is...
Yeah, I know. Your question is, can she do it on her own volition? Not if the husband doesn't initiate it. He has to initiate it.
But then will she be talking to
him? Only if she would then...
Innocent,
yeah. No, then she doesn't. No, because the contrary...
No, on the contrary, what does the Torah say? That if she is proved to be innocent, then in that case she'll be blessed with a child and so on and so forth, right? The opinion is that it's a mitzvah for a husband to act this way, okay? I'll tell you, I mean, it's the same thing, you know. You have, later on in Devarim, you know, in Parsha Kiseitse over there, they have, you know, about divorce. Okay? So again, there's a difference of opinion even about divorce. One opinion is mitzvah legarshenu. It's a mitzvah to divorce your wife. But of course, you know, because of the problem of kimotzo ervas dover, the question is, what do you mean by ervas dover? You see, this is the problem. That if you mean, you know, that he found in her, you know, some atrocious action. He caught her in adultery, presumably, right? Then it's a mitzvah, you see, to divorce her. But
doesn't make
sense. But you know, Rabbi Akiva said that the divorce can be even on the basis of the fact that dicha tafshila, that she burnt the food. Okay.
He doesn't like the way she cooked.
He doesn't like the way, you know, she keeps a house and things like that and so on. Although, according to some, this is a euphemism for committing adultery. You know, they have to overlook.
Oh, really?
Yeah. There's different opinions. But as I say, we follow the opinion that Higdicha Tavshila means that if a husband and wife can't agree with each other and they're miserable and so on, so in that the case, there is the possibility of divorce. You don't have to, you know, both consent that they want a divorce, and then that, you know, then you go before the best and you arrange, you know, to give a divorce. But as I said, it's funny, I mean, it seems, you know, mitzvah legarsha would seem to mean that a husband has a mitzvah to divorce his wife, which of course is not really what it means.
Well, it's out of context, really.
Right, of course it's out of its context.
There's complete
mitzvah
to look for an act, and shoot away the mother so he can take the baby.
Yeah, well, right. I mean, you're talking about Shiloh HaKan,
no,
you know,
no.
Right. Yes. No, you have to have grounds for it, obviously. Look, if a husband and wife are happy, he's not going to go in divorce simply because there's an opinion that says it's mitzvah the garden. You understand? It doesn't work that way. Not if we pride ourselves upon shalom bayis.
Yeah, shalom bayis. Could be
any
better. Okay. So, yes, let's see. We'll hold the cover here. Yeah. All right. Right. So he says, you know, he says the machlokes is about specific psukim, okay? The kinei is ishtay, namely this pasuk, you know, is reshus divi Rabbi Yishmael and Rabbi Akiva and Mechaiva, right? So now they say, my Talmud the Rabbi Yishmael. So tell me, why does Rabbi Yishmael hold that in this particular case, namely the case of the Sota, that it's only reshus? You understand? So, says, Sova lo, because he had the same opinion, Kehai Tana, of a certain Tana, the Tanya, as we learned, Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov Eimer, Kilepi Sha'omro Torah, inasmuch as the Torah says, Lo Sista Sachicha Bilbovecha, you are not allowed to have any hatred for another person in your heart, right? So, Yochel Kegoin Zu. So, are we to assume then that the same thing is true in this particular case? In other words, well, he's not even allowed to have hatred towards his wife, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, Talmud Lomar, this is why the Torah then comes along and has a pasuk which says, V'yovar olov ruach kino v'kinei es ishtay. Okay? In other words, that if there should happen to be a spirit of jealousy that happens to come upon him, then in that case, obviously, because he's seen conduct on her part that didn't seem right, so in that case, then the kinyas ishta, he's to warn his wife about it. Okay? So, inasmuch as we have, you know, a general rule that says you're not allowed to hate another person, but his heart, unfortunately, is full of hatred because he has witnessed something, so that's why the Torah has a remedy for him. But it doesn't mean that he has to avail himself of the remedy at this particular point. Okay? So let's take a look again at the Rashi. Okay? Alright. Kilafi. You see where it says Kilafi over there? It's roughly about halfway down at the end of a line. It says Kilafi, inasmuch as Kimo, just as Acharei Sheomra Torah, since the Torah has said Sheoser Lahavi Atzmo Lidei Sino V'Tagor, that a person is not allowed to bring himself into a condition of hatred and quarreling, right? A person should not put himself in a situation where he becomes filled with hatred and the desire to argue, to quarrel and so on. So, how about us? You know, our situation with Sota, so Yochol Apsekein, so as we say then in the case of the Sota, this is also the same thing, namely, Sheyireh Eishtoi Everes Al Das Yehudis, that when he observes that his wife is violating the laws that pertain to Yiddishkeit. This is what they mean by Averus Hadas Yehudis, okay? In what way? In this particular case, it is Nisteres im Shecheinecho, that she goes, you know, into seclusion, goes into rendezvous with the men neighbors, obviously, right? So, Lo Yikane Lo, he should not do this. So that's why the pasuk says what? By the way, Kilafi, Rashi explains, it means Loshon Kedegen, it is much as, okay? Because it's not a common expression. So Rashi continues and says, Talmud Loma, this is the reason why the Pasuk says, the Kinei, right? Imratza Lekane, if he wishes then to go through this business of warning her and everything else and so on and so forth, or Rishus Biyodo, right? He has the right to do so if he wishes. Umishum, and inasmuch the Eloi Ksiv Kra, that if the Torah had not written this particular Pasuk, then Hava Amina, we would have said the Osaru, right? That it is absolutely prohibited for a husband, you know, to go through this, to warn his wife and so on and so forth.
Go
right?
The whole procedure.
Yeah.
Right?
So the Omer Rabbi Yishmael Hocha Rishus, right? So Rabbi Yishmael said in this particular case it is Rishus, Avol, but Bechol Nitzveis Aseh Shebat Torah Lo Amar Hochi. When it comes to other mitzvos, which are, you know, the affirmative mitzvos in the Torah, he doesn't say this, right? So, it's on this basis that Rabbi Yishmael comes along and says, here in this particular case, the pasuk would indicate that if he wishes to act this way, okay. But if not, not. But if we didn't have a pasuk, then we would not know whether it is voluntary on his part or it should never have arisen in the first place. Because, you know, even if she carries on in a way which is not in the way that, you know, a Jewish woman should behave, then he has no recourse whatever. So the Torah gave a recourse in this particular case, okay? Well, veris haldas humanis. All right, now how about Rabbi Akiva? Rabbi Akiva says, Kinui achvino ksiv. Why does Rabbi Akiva insist that it is a mitzvah to go through with it? So this is why I gave out the Chumashim. You will see that the word v'kine actually is found twice. Okay, let's take a look first of all, right? Yeah. Yeah, that may be so, but nevertheless, suspicion is one thing, but suspicion that generates hatred, you understand? Yeah, maybe, but obviously, you know, once the worm gets in over there, it creates problems. Right? I mean, if a husband becomes suspicious of his wife, I'm sure that it's going to eventually lead to becoming, you know, to hating her too, you know, because it gnaws on his brain. Yeah. You know, this reminds me of O.J. Simpson, you know. So it reminds me of O.J. Simpson.
Right? Love and hate, right?
He insists that he loves her, he loves her, but at the same time he beat her and probably he killed her and so on and so forth. Now,
but this will expose faith. This perhaps, if his suspicions are right, then he begins to confess. And if his suspicions are wrong, it's for her protection.
Right. But again, we have to bear in mind, just to be suspicious is not enough. If he has to go through Sota, then he has to give her official warning and everything else. If he has not warned her on the basis of the testimony of two witnesses, or in the presence of two witnesses, that he's given a warning concerning so-and-so, then in that particular case, she is not prohibited to him, as we've already learned. She lives with him and everything else, you see.
But for the same time,
right,
if he has warned her,
right,
and he has witnesses that saw her go to this place, there's still no proof that she did something wrong.
Right, but we also said that she has to be secluded
for a
time
period
long
of time.
Enough
no, so
for an action to take place.
He had a business meeting. There's still no proof.
All right, and in that particular case, she went in with books and she came out with the figures and facts or something, so on and so forth, that it was only a business conference. Okay.
Maybe he's a doctor.
Well, it depends. It depends on whether you dispel the husband's jealousy. If you make him unjealous, let's say, at this particular point.
Right. It works against the husband, too.
Yeah.
To prove his sometimes unwarranted jealousy.
Unjustified.
It works both ways.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Are there any statistics in the Gemara anywhere how often this issue was in effect carried out?
Didn't happen too often. Because, first of all,
didn't happen too often.
Later
that's
on,
they had trouble finding the bitter waters.
Well, that, I mean, with the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash anyway, the bitter waters business didn't exist anymore, because I had to be in the Beis HaMikdash, I had to be administered by a Kohen and everything else. I mean, and, you know, he had to be able, he had to write the psukim of this parsha on a piece of parchment, and then you have to obliterate it, including God's name is obliterated. As we said before, this is a horrible thing.
Who had the formula for the bitter waters? How did they make the bitter waters?
Pardon me?
What is the formulation?
The formulation of the bitter waters actually was that there was water and they put dust from the earth of the Beis HaMikdash over there on it. Karka HaMishkan.
Yeah, from there, right in front of the Mishkan.
So obviously, I guess, you know, it didn't impart a very sweet taste to the water. But it's not only that, you know. Actually, it doesn't say Mayim Morim, but it says Amayim Hamorim, which means the water that produces a curse, right? That if she were really guilty, then, you know, a curse would take effect, but if she were innocent, it wouldn't. And so, okay. If we take a look over here, on page 589, take a look at Pasuk 14 over there.
Yeah.
Okay. You notice that in the Pasuk, it says, V'ovar alov ruach kino, right? So, of course, we've spoken before. And then, V'kine yesishto, right? V'hinit moa. And then, U'ovar alov ruach kino, V'kine yesishto, V'hilonit moa. So the question is, why do we have to have the Kine Yisishto twice in the same pasuk? Of course, you could say from the point of view of literary style, right? You could say Kine Yisishto, the first one is because Shitaka was guilty. That's the Hinit Moa. And the second time we could say the Kine Yisishto, the Hinit Moa, because she was innocent, okay? In spite of the fact that the Kine Yisishto, in other words, he went through it, okay? But what Rabbi Akiva is arguing is as follows. Why does the Pasuk have to say twice V'kidei Sishto? So the implication would be, according to Rabbi Akiva, that is a mitzvah for the husband to do it in order to do what? Either in order to establish V'hidit Bo, right? Or to establish V'hilogit Bo, that she's perfectly innocent. That's the reason why he says it is a chobah. Okay. All right. Now we come to the next case.
Excuse me.
Let's see. Did I get there yet? Because Rabbi Akiva, right? The Rabbi Yishmael. All right. So anyway, we haven't finished yet with this. We can hear Sishta. He says Rabbi Yishmael. All right. So look, how about him? Right? Yeah. Why does it say Bikinei Sishta twice? After all, according to you, Rabbi Yishmael, it's only voluntary, right? So he says, I did the boy lemichtav, inasmuch as the Torah had to write the he nit moa and the he lo nit moa, right? That either she is guilty,
she's
literally she's defiled, right? Or she's not guilty, she's innocent. So ksiv na me v'kinei sishtei. Okay? So for the same reason they wrote v'kinei sishtei, and they wrote it what? Twice. The Tanya, as we've learned, the Vei Rabbi Yishmael, that among the school, you know, of Rabbi Yishmael, in other words, the Talmidim of Rabbi Yishmael, they said the Tana, send the name of Tana the Rabbi Yishmael, that called Parsha, Shenemro v'nishteis, loy nishteis, el b'shvil dovash nishchadishmo. Okay? The only reason why the Torah will repeat the same thing over again is in order to establish something new that was not covered by the first category. First category would be, in other words, that she is guilty. So that's why it says V'kineis Ishtai. And the second category, what is the Dover Chorish? That she is innocent, and that's the reason why. Okay? So in other words, according to Rabbi Yishmael, it's only the Lashon, if you wish, that is the reason, the justification for it, but still he holds to his opinion that in this particular case it's only voluntary. Okay. Now, what was the next case? The next case was law yitama, right? In other words, he is to defile himself to her. In other words, to his sister, and in general, you know, to the other close krovim, the other close relations to him, that the kohen has to be metame. And of course, from this we learn in general, you know, the hilchos aveilus, I mean, for whom do you have to write, and for whom do you have to observe aveilus? So we learn it from this particular parsha, you know, from the kohanim. So, Rishus, Divrei Rabbi Yishmael, right? Rabbi Yishmael says that it is only voluntary on the part of the Kohen to defile himself to her, and Rabbi Akiva Omer Chova, because Rabbi Akiva says that it is an obligation. Now again, Gemara wants to know, by Tab of the Rabbi Yishmael, what is the reason of Rabbi Yishmael? Why in this case does he say that Lo Yitabo is only voluntary? He says, I did Ichsiv, inasmuch as it is written, Emor El HaKohanim B'nei Aharon, right? Speak to the Kohanim, the sons of Aharon, the Amato Lehem, and you have to say to them, the Nefesh Lo Yitamo B'Yamo, that you're not to defile yourselves at all for any soul, in other words, for any dead. So, Istericha, that's the reason why the Torah now comes and it says, the Mikhtav, and it writes, Lo Yitamo. In other words, there are cases where you have to observe Avelis. Okay? But of course, the problem is, he holds that the business in this particular case is what? It's voluntary.
Right.
But I think that we would have to say that Lo Yitamo is only a specific case, and not all of them, whereas the Chachamim, they say that it's for all of them. Okay, this is not very clear to me. I'll have to tell you quite honestly, I don't see Rabbi Yishmael's opinion over here, the argument, right? That's what the pasuk says, right?
It's the first one. The second
is,
Kim
Yishmael
after
Rabbi Yishmael, Yimal Yodhi,
Sure,
Lohay Salayish, Lohay Tamar, right, yeah, that's what I'm saying, yeah. Right. All right, we have it twice. You're absolutely right, Arthur. In other words, the first case establishes the first one.
The first one is a cloud, in effect.
It's a cloud,
the second one is one specific case, namely his sister who's not married anymore.
Correct. But at the moment, the argument is that he says it's Rishus. We haven't yet had the fact that he says, you know, that where it's nishnais, so that would prove it. Okay, yeah, okay. But thank you for anticipating. You're absolutely right. This is what happens, okay? The Rabbi Akiva, now why does Rabbi Akiva hold that it is, you know, chova, that he has to? Because it is written, im nishayro, for his flesh, literally. So nafka, that's the reason why it says, lo yitamo, right? So, is it really necessary to add also lo yitamo? In other words, we simply could have learned that, you know, if he has to lishayro for all those who are close to him, you know, related to him, he has to defile himself. So why do we have to have lo yitamo? Right? So the answer is lechova, right? Rabbi Yishmael, right? So he has a different interpretation. He says lo means for her, mitamor, yes, he should defile himself for her, for the sister. The ein mitamor, but not for simply one of her limbs. In other words, let's say that she suffered amputation or chas v'shalom or something like that, which, I mean, you know, according to the law, the part of a body that has been severed from the person still has to be buried. Okay? So the question is, in that case, do you also have to observe Avelis for that part of the body, or only if the person, you know, the person died? You understand? This is the question. Okay.
Is that
so? Lo mitamo v'yei mitamo nivar. Well, if we observe, you know, Tara v'tumo, then I have to tell you that actually, if let's say, you know, they bury a limb, then the person who buries the limb also becomes Tommy, right? This is the days, you know, when Tar and Tumah,
yeah,
right, played a part that you couldn't go to the Beis HaMikdash if you're in the state of Tumah. You can only go in the state of Tara, right?
If you're using your Thompson's.
Right.
The people who went on the rake, something was buried.
Yeah. Now you have to put up a marker for that. This is a tziyun, as it says in Sefer Yecheskel, right? And this is why we put up Batsavus also, so people should know, right? I mean, besides the fact that we want to perpetuate the memory, you know, first, after all, we see that Yaakov Avinu already did that in the case of Rochel, right? Batsavus, Gevuras Rochel, Adal Yom Hazeh, and so on.
He erected a monument for that.
Right, right.
Marker.
Yeah. All right, let's take a look at the Rashi up to this particular point before we turn the page. Okay.
I already turned the page.
You've already turned. Turn back. Turn back.
Turn back. Show yourself.
Right. All right. Can you actually see we have all of our kino and kinei sishta? This is where we were up to, right? The healing is more so chad l'rishus chad l'chadu. Okay. All right. let's review what I just read. It says kinui achrino, right? In other words, there is a second pasuk that says v'kinei sishne, right? And we said that the second one is in order to bring in something new. What is it? Something to bring in something new? So that where the Torah says v'over alov rach kino v'kinei sishto, right? V'hi lo nitmoa. So why do we have that added after it said, you understand? Why does it say that he suspects her and she becomes defiled? And then, and he suspects her and she's not defiled? So it says, chad l'rishus b'chad l'choyba. One pasuk means rishus and the other one choyba. In other words, rishus, either it's voluntary and the other one in the case that it's choyba. In other words, if he actually saw her, that she was doing it, then in that case he's obligated to do it. But if it's only suspicion or something like that, then in that case it's mishus. For Rabbi Yishmael Omer Lachor, he says, I did the boy lemichta v'hi loy nitmoa, right? That she becomes defiled or she does not become defiled. She sofek hu biyodenu. That in the case that there is a doubt created as far as we are concerned as to whether you have to go through it with or not, right? The Yafal Pichain, nevertheless, he says, Osra Hakosa Misafek, right? The Yafal Pichain, well, I wouldn't say Osra, I should really read this Asora. In other words, the Pasuk had now made her prohibited to her husband as a result of the doubt as to whether she did or she didn't, right? So, because of Name, so that's why the Kinei Achrina, that's why they wrote to the next one, that the Afal Gav, that's why they wrote another one, in order to indicate that if she's innocent, then he has no business, and he doesn't have to go through with this business of Soto, where, you know, he has his doubts as to whether he's right or not, okay?
How can he prove that? Prove her answer now, unless he goes through my.
Yeah, but he doesn't have to bring her into the whole process of the ordeal to begin with. That's the idea. Doesn't have to. I mean, he could have given a warning, but until she actually, you know, goes and secludes herself with the person against whom he has warned her not to, remember, I mean. It only applies to the person against whom he gave a warning. But if she went and secluded herself with somebody else, this business doesn't work out. Because he has to have those initial witnesses to begin with. If he doesn't have them, then it's all. As we said earlier this evening, let him give her a divorce and faulty for you. He's not happy with her, okay?
Suppose she says that he wants to give her a divorce.
Yeah.
Did she make some kind of a comment, says, look, I saw you, I have witnesses, don't do it again. She decides, I'll fool him. I get witnesses, they see that I go there, then I come out, and I'll drink the water, and nothing's going to happen. He's going to be embarrassed, and hey, blah, blah, blah.
Well,
he can never divorce me again, etc., etc.
I don't think that this situation would occur. Because
I don't know.
It is, look, let's face it, it's no COVID to the woman to be suspected and to have to go through with this. Because as we already learned,
yeah, but no COVID to the husband either.
Right, true. I agree with you, of course. This is why, you know, the Chachamim came and said, forget about it. If men are equally guilty, then, you know, forget about it, okay? But again, I'm thinking from the point of view of the woman. Why would a woman want to subject herself to going through all this, but it would be a lot easier to simply...
She's very, very angry. She'd do anything to get, almost anything to get even with him.
Well, but she's not getting even with him, Arthur. Arthur, she's not getting even with him by going through a procedure where the Kohen, first of all, as we learned in the Rashi the other week. Okay,
yeah, it was,
right.
Okay.
What happens? That... You know, he has to, for example, uncover her hair, and after all, a woman is supposed to keep her head covered. He has to tie a rope around her breasts, and so on, which is no, you know, it's a sign of disgrace, you understand?
Yeah.
So in other words, why should she voluntarily submit to something like that, simply, you know, in order what? To try to get something out of him and something like that. It's better off for her, you know, to forget about it and say, Lord, give me a divorce, give me my ksubin, forget me, I mean, that's all. And let's not go through with this business because it's not right. And it doesn't redound to the husband's reputation either, you know, that he does this. I mean, obviously, you know that. You read in the paper, for example, divorce actions, okay? So is it a covet to the husband?
It's a covet to either one.
Right, or is it a covet to the wife? I mean, unfortunately, that besmirches both of their reputations.
Yeah.
All right, so getting back to the Rashi over here, okay. So because of Nami the Kiddiach, we know, right, the Apagav the Motzi, now he says, the Apagav the Motzi Lemichtav Hochi. Now, even the Torah could have written the following. The Ovar Alov Rach Kino, right, that the spirit of jealousy rises within him, right, passes through him. The Kine is Ishto Vehinitmo, Olo Nitmo. She is either guilty or innocent, right? You understand? Without having to do what? To write a second, the Kine is Ishto, right? You understand? They could have simply said that. So, Apilo Hochi. So even so, Orche de Kro, literally the way of the Pasuk, in other words, the Torah uses a certain diction, okay? The diction of the Torah is such, Lachazor, right? To repeat, then he knows, and to once again say Yeso Amor, Nipnei Dovarache, because of something else, Hamischadish Nichtilaso. You know, a new element which is introduced as a result of the fact that we have this doubling of lashon. Okay? Pardon me? No, what the new one is, we said, however, is, you know, that if the husband wishes, then he doesn't have to go through with it. This is the chiddush that he got. From the fact that the kine is ishtov, he loin it more. You understand? This is how he's now interpreting the fact that he has the choice, if you wish, you know, to either decide to prove her guilt or to prove her innocence. Okay.
He has a choice. Yeah. Why does he go to that extent in the first place?
Because, as we said before, a ruach, a spirit, an evil spirit, the ruach tuma, right, entered into him, right, and incited him to do this.
He gets cold feet.
Right.
We got the advantage.
Yeah. Okay. Now we come to the next case over there. Yitzrich lebichtav lo yitabo. Right. What does the Torah have to say? Lo yitabo. So loma shabuto letame lekroyim halolu, which the implication would be that if you wish, you can be metame. In other words, if you wish, you can observe avelis, you know, for these close relatives to you. So he says, "Mechi im l'sheiro napko." Inasmuch as we already got from the fact that there is a general idea that you must observe mourning for all your close relatives, right? L'sheir, literally, you know, your own flesh and blood, so to speak, right? The nefesh lo yitama b'yanur, right? That you, and so then ki'im nisha'ira korbeilov, this is what the pasuk said, and then it goes in by saying what? The imo, the ovi, right? His mother, his father, etc., etc. Vela achosei habsulo, right? And also for his unmarried sister. So umemela shaminen, and from this then we would learn, right, that the mitabe la'elo, that for all these relatives you are expected to be mitabe. So why does it then add lo yitamo? You understand? Why do they have to have? If Meso, if she died, he ate it. So he gives a new interpretation. Not that Rabbi Yishmael is saying that he does not have to observe mourning for his sister, but rather, what is the new, what is the chiddush, so to speak, that is introduced over here? That if Meso, if she died, the Eino Mitami Le'evareha, he would not have to go and be metame for simply the burial of one of her limbs, right? Imecha be'ela mukesh chin, for example. One of them is afflicted, you know, with leprosy and, you know, falls off, right? Or be'evorovdovdin, or, you know, the one of the limbs would fall, so ein metame lahem. So he does not be metame for that. The kaim alone, the Orva Arota, because we have a klal established in the Perek Orva Arota, which is one of the prokim in Holland, towards the end over there, says Eva min Achai, that the a limb from a living being, right, mitame, it does create tumor. In other words, you know, it gives you uncleanliness. Ke Eva min Ames, right. Just as that from a dead body, an Ephraimis. The Starich law, and so therefore I have to have this new Pasuk law, Yitamo, according to Rabbi Yishmael, to tell us what? The Miyute of the Reha, in order to exclude the fact that if it's only one of her Evorim, that for that he does not have to be Mitamo. The Rabbi Akiva, I'll just conclude this one over here. The Rabbi Akiva, he says, what? Just to tell me that, he says, Imkain, namely, that if the Torah tells us that you only have, you know, if you don't feel like it, you know, it's reshus, it's okay. Otherwise, you know, so he says, Lichte Rachmono law, velishtoik. Let the Torah simply say the word law and say nothing more. Take a look at the Rashi on top over there. Lichtoi Rachmono law, in other words, you know, V'lachos HaPsul HaKrove law, right, hard to, right? And V'lishtoi cannot say anything more. The Mashma, because it teaches the Nefesh Lo Yitamo B'Yamov, that, you know, for the following, you are not to, not allowed to define yourself if you're a Kohen, right? Except Kiyim Lashir, except for you know, your close flesh, your close relations, V'lachosei Apsula law, and also Koloma Lugufo Sholem, and for the your sister, if it is law, in other words, Lugufo Sholem, meaning the whole sister, right? V'lo Leivareha. In other words, if it is to teach what Rabbi Yishmael said just before, that law Yitamu means that for simply a limb, it's if you wish, you observe, if you don't want it. So Rabbi Akiva says, I don't need a pasuk to tell me that for a limb you don't. Why? Because what does the Torah say? We'll stop with this. It says, Yitamo Lomoli. So then, why does the Torah have the word Yitamo? What do I need it for? So the answer is, obviously, it's in order to teach us that it isn't simply reshus, but it is obligatory for him to observe, you know, the mourning for her. Okay. Yes.
Finish
here? Huh? Okay, then I'll go a couple of more lines and then we'll call it quits because we haven't yet finished the law. Okay,
yeah.
The law. It says so. Shmavidah. All right. Now, for Rabbi Yishmael. All right. So, getting back to Rabbi Yishmael, he says, "How about you?" So he says, "I did the course of law, in as much as the Torah wrote the word law, right? Course of Nami Yitama. So that's the reason why it also wrote the word Yitama." As we learned that the school of Rabbi Shmuel said as follows, the Talmud of Rabbi Shmuel called Parsha Shanaim Rav and Nishne Yisrael Nishkai Yisrael Bishmuel Davish Nishkad Ishwa. Okay? That if you have a Pasuk which then repeats again, it has to be for some new idea, and of course the new idea, as we said before, is what? Not that Rabbi Shmuel holds that if he doesn't want to observe for his sister, he doesn't have to, but the chiddush is that he doesn't have to observe only if it is only for an aver of the dead. And of course, I mean, it wouldn't be necessarily just an aver of his sister. It could be an aver of anyone, you understand? That he doesn't have to observe that. Okay. So that is the chiddush. Pardon me? Yeah, right. Yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right. Yeah, right. There's an Eivor Malachai in this particular case. Of course, when we consider Eivor Malachai, we're normally thinking in terms of tearing an animal, you know, taking a limb off and eating it. But you're right that according to this interpretation, that the Eivor Malachai also refers then to the limb of a person who is still living, but that limb itself could be a source of tumor. You're right.
I'm just going to ask about that.
Yeah. In that case, I would say they would probably say that it's okay.
Yeah,
probably. The only thing that they do mention.
Then you go to the mikvah and the
interestingly enough, since you brought in this business about replacement parts, with teeth, they do mention replacement teeth.
Oh, they do?
Yeah. Okay, right. So, Yitzhak Hashem, we shall meet again next week.
So,
same
we're
time,
on,
same place.
On
yes.
Ahmed Bey.
Gimel Ahmed Bey, right.
Okay.
Just to summarize a little bit of what we were covering at the end of last week.
Because he went to hear
you're right. I mean, that his punishment should be that we don't go into it in detail.
Yeah, he needs a little Torah after that.
Okay, maybe a little Torah to be,
to balance him out.
To be Machaper.
Yeah,
right.
That's why I'm here.
Okay. Yeah, we recorded for posterity that you went to hear that that left winger. Okay.
All right. Nice.
Right. Only kidding.
Now, we see that we entered into a discussion of the machlokes between Rabbi Yishmael and Rabbi Akiva. Okay? The argument started off by saying that apparently in three cases, including the first case that started off that had to do with Sota, namely, must the husband be jealous of his wife? Does he have to be mekane, right? Is that rishus or is it chova, right? Is it simply voluntary? I mean, if the husband feels like doing it, he does it? Or is it something that the minute the husband has the submission, then he's required by the Torah to go and to be mekane his wife, okay? So, according to the interpretation, we said that, that Rabbi Yishmael says that it's reshus. In other words, it's only voluntary, and whereas Rabbi Akiva says that it's chovah, that he has to do it, it's a mitzvah, right? Okay. Then we came to another case, okay?
Well, I don't think he's... is it really jealousy that he's according to Rabbi Akiva, or is he meaning that
the minute that he sees something is not right with his wife's conduct, he should immediately challenge it, obviously.
Yeah, and also be watchful of his wife,
right,
and loving.
Yeah. And okay. And then a couple of other, yes, the two other cases that they discussed, one of them that we'll go over, you know, the new one for tonight that we'll discuss. But the second case was lo yitamo. In other words, the Torah says, you know, that a kohen has to be metame for the close relatives, right? You understand? So let's say he has a sister, and he feels that he's not obligated. He doesn't want to do it. So according to the interpretation of Rabbi Yishmael, again, it's reshus, it's voluntary, whereas, you know, according to Rabbi Kiva, it's chova. In reality, it's not so much really the way it seems, but at any rate, this is how the argument is being presented right now. Okay.
What are you talking about in terms of his relationship to his sister?
If she dies, does the Kohen have to be metame for her?
You didn't mention that.
Okay,
right.
Yeah, sorry. Okay, because I know this is all connected with the Parsha. Yeah, this is what the Parsha is, you know, that a Kohen, you know. So according to Rabbi Yishmael, if he wants to be metame for her, okay. If he doesn't want to be metame for her, okay. Right?
But with his mother and father.
He brings in the question about the sister only because the Pasuk has a reference to her. It says, "Lo yitamor," to her he shall defile himself. Okay.
But also referred to his
To the others already, it says, "Nefesh lo yitamor bi'anvov," that they should not be metame, right? Ki im, except lishaero hakarov elav, for literally the flesh that is near unto him. In other words, the members, the close. The members of his family were closely connected to him, and then it goes in Le'oviv, Imei, Lachis, Le'oviv, right,
father,
right, Imei, and so on. Okay, they don't mention everyone, but obviously, one of them would be a wife. I mean, this is understood, right? So, at any rate, it would seem that at this particular point, since Rabbi Yishmael says that it is only voluntary because that's how he reads lo yitamor, if he wishes to, he can, and if not, not. Whereas Rabbi Akiva reads it as how lo yitamor means that he definitely has to be metami to her. Okay? And then the third case was in reference to Avodim, the Evet Kanani, where we have a pasuk that says that Yolom Bohem Ta'avodim, that you will always have them as slaves unto you forever. Okay? So again, Rabbi Yishmael says that it's only voluntary. If a man wants to have Canaanite slaves, he has them. He doesn't want to, it's nisht. Okay? Whereas according to Rabbi Akiva, it is a mitzvah. And of course, the implication of mitzvah would be then that the master, the Jewish master, is not allowed to emancipate his Canaanite slave, his Evet Kanani. Okay?
What is the logic between the fact that it's a mitzvah that he should have, that they should own Canaanite slaves?
Not so much that it's a mitzvah as the fact that if you have them,
not to liberate them.
Right, so according to Rabbi Yishmael, keeping them is only voluntary on your part. If you want to give them their freedom, you give them their freedom. You understand? Whereas according to Rabbi Akiva, because the pasuk says the Yolom Bohem Ta'avodu, the implication would be that if it's an Evet Kanani, then you have to hold them in perpetuity. You have to keep them as slaves, and you would be violating the law of the Torah in order to buy freeing them. Okay? This is the way it reads at the moment. All right?
Would you be violating the law of the Torah if you didn't own any at all?
No. Because, I mean, this would come already in the category of what we would say, you know, shevi al tasa. In other words, you sit quietly, you don't do anything. Okay? We had that, of course, in connection, you know, with Marcus. I mean, whether you can, in that case, inflict Marcus, of course, the answer is absolutely not.
What is the nifikan shave
to? Shave the al tasa. Okay?
Shave,
right? Sit down, the al tasa, don't do anything. Okay? Alright, so you could say that this is a case of Sheva Al-Tasa. So if it's a Sheva Al-Tasa, then nobody says that you have to go and acquire a slave. Right. Nobody says that. Okay. But if you have a slave, then in that case, according to Rabbi Yishmael, keeping him is only voluntary. Whereas according to Rabbi Akiva, it is mandatory. It's mechova. Right.
You made your point.
Yeah. Okay. So, taking the three cases we analyzed last week, right, that it would seem, therefore, that according to Rabbi Yishmael, where the Torah says, this you shall do, and this you shall do, and this you shall do, in other words, what we would say, a mitzvah asay, is only voluntary on your part. If you feel like it, you do it. If you don't feel like it, say, don't do nothing. That's all, right? It's the way it seems.
Yeah.
Whereas Rabbi Akiva, of course, says, if it's an affirmative command, then in that case, you have to keep it, right? So,